Okay, we're back. Hey, I heard some strange noises there. It almost sounded like a 767 trying to come in and land at sea level at 550 miles an hour. But that's probably not what it was. I don't know what it was. Anyway, we are back. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Aidan Monahan. He's a very solid 9/11 researcher who's been submitting FOIA requests and getting interesting answers. We also have Wyatt from Maryland. I did just cut Wyatt out due to that noise. Now let's bring him back on and see if the horrible noise resumes. And if not, we'll ask him if he's come up with another question. Hello, Wyatt. How are you?
Good. So we're good. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah. You're coming through fine now.
Good, good. Yes, one question is the way that the Pentagon, where it was hit, the topography itself would not have allowed, if you look at it, because it came in through off the Arlington side at Arlington Cemetery, and the topography wouldn't allow it to level off at an adequate distance with the speed it was maintaining to punch through the Pentagon.
Wyatt, would that be true even if the C-ring hole were in fact just a cutout with explosives, if that had nothing to do with the airplane, which it almost certainly did not?
Well, according to the official story, it went through the three rings. That's the official story, which we know.
Right, but that's nonsense.
It's a myth.
It's a myth.
So some eyewitnesses, it was reported, did smell cordite, which is an explosive, lingering in the air. And the person was a very small skeleton crew working in the Pentagon in that section that day. And that was the only section that a skeleton crew was in there. So that's why the death toll inside the Pentagon was at a minimum. But the official report is that they were able to identify the passengers that were killed on that aircraft, but yet there's no recoverable parts of that aircraft. So it's a myth. It's a lie. The whole story is a hoax.
Well, it's American
people.
That sounds like you're really skeptical about whether any sizable aircraft or perhaps any aircraft at all actually hit the Pentagon, and many other people are. I know Barbara Honegger is also pretty skeptical. She compiled all kinds of information that there was a massive explosive event with witnesses smelling cordite, so on and so forth, more than 5 minutes before the official impact time. And I don't know. What do you think about that, Aidan? Do you? I guess your future FOIA request for chain of custody information about the alleged human remains of aircraft passengers might help answer that question.
Yeah, there's a lot of conflicting information regarding the Pentagon. There really is. I mean, I don't expect to see what I see on the outer facet of the building before it collapses. We know, for example, the holes created within the facet of the World Trade Center towers were gigantic. However, we have still intact vertical columns, still intact windows within this hole before the facade collapsed, before the one segment of the building collapsed. There's just a lot of conflicting information, and basically all we've been provided with are assurances that, yes, the plane did hit there, yes, there were human beings who perished and were recovered and identified. I would like to see those records. I think they'd be very helpful in resolving the controversy. Beyond that, there's just not enough information of determination. I'm kind of in the I don't know category as to what happened at the Pentagon. I know there are eyewitnesses who allege that 77 did hit the building, but for example, you have the FDR animation generated by the flight data recorder readout that shows a trajectory that would not allow for the creation of the exit hole in the C ring, and also the destruction of the lamppost in front of the building. That would require a completely different flight path. And of course, you have the American Society of Civil Engineers generating a report that details a certain flight path that allows for the C ring hole, creation and also the destruction of the light posts. But witnesses and the flight data recorder information spell out another flight path hundreds of feet to the north that would not allow for the physical evidence detailed by the American Society of Civil Engineers in their report. So there's a lot of conflicting information and a lot of absent information, and that leaves me in the I don't know category concerning the Pentagon at this point.
Well, yeah, me too, Aiden, although I guess what I, you know, sometimes I think that it's one thing to not know what happened, but it's another thing to know that it was so bogus and the lies have been so great that it adds up to obviously it wasn't what they told us. And I think, in my opinion, that holds for the Pentagon attack, that regardless of exactly how it was done, the overall set of evidence that we're presented with is just radically incompatible with the story that we've been told. And thus, we can conclude that something very different happened. What precisely, I don't know. But what that means is that this was part of a false flag attack. And I know there are people who really don't want to get into the Pentagon at all. I know Alex Jones is kind of leery of going near even talking about the Pentagon. Mike Rivero of What Really Happened is also very leery of it. You know, it's sort of like so many of us are about the, you know, the no planes thing now, the video fakery thing. We don't want to go there. It smells bad. It's distracting and so on. Well, that's kind of how those guys feel about the Pentagon. And yet, myself and an awful lot of other people, like probably including you, Aiden, and, you know, including David Ray Griffin, look at what happened there and say, you know, no way. I mean, this is obviously false a story as the story of what happened at the Twin Towers.
Yeah, there's just the absence of complete information opens up a lot of room for speculation. And, you know, also, you referred to the CIT investigators earlier, the Citizens Investigation Team. You know, a lot of people give them heat for various different reasons, but they deserve credit for securing some very revealing interviews that placed the aircraft hundreds of feet to the north of where it should have been to cause the physical damage that was observed on scene. There's a two police sergeants who are interviewed who, without question, assert that the plane was to the north of the Citgo station, between the station and also Arlington Cemetery. And you basically just have, you know, two different official stories at the Pentagon regarding the flight path. And it makes the magic bullet theory in Dealey Plaza almost look like child's play.
Good point. And yeah, regarding the Citizen Investigation Team, they have taken a lot of heat, and I think some of it is unjust. Some of the people who criticize them, in fact, you know, I've noticed that there are these bloggers who sort of just lurk on the internet. Most of them are anonymous, and all they ever do is attack people who are actually doing something productive. I mean, I've been pestered by a whole group of these apparent disinformation agents. I don't want to go out and accuse them of anything, but they're sure acting like it. If they're not collecting a paycheck, they're losing out. And it seems to me that the people who go after Craig in the CIT effort, many of those people are just provocateurs. They're just people who are, you know, blogging under false names. Never, not one shred of anything productive have they ever done. And yet, you know, they're just picking fights and causing trouble. I mean, this has been a real problem. And I think this kind of attacking people under pseudonyms from anonymous blog posts behind computers somewhere is a vastly bigger problem plaguing the 9/11 truth movement, way bigger than, you know, all of the no plane theories and all of the goofy evidence positions put together. Is that your take, or do you have a different take on that?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of toxicity on the internet, so to speak. I think when viewing the information, one should simply be guided by raw information and less so on opinions, you know, from various entities. You know, for example, you know, the CIT guys do take heat, you know, for various different reasons. Once upon a time, I did not accept their information. I was very skeptical. I didn't think that something that obvious could have gone unknown for so long. But, you know, after viewing the information in their interviews, I have to conclude that it does decisively place the aircraft hundreds of feet away from where the American Society of Civil Engineers placed the aircraft. And there's just so much unknown information regarding the Pentagon. Hopefully, the lawsuit I am about, I'm pretty close to filing, will shed some light on it. As I said, if the FBI can generate records that confirm that they did collect human remains very carefully in a very detailed fashion, you know, from the Pentagon scene of those on board the aircraft, and also, you know, chain of custody records with the AFIP, Armed Forces Institute of Pathology, that would definitely be helpful to the official story.
You might get falsified records. Is that like how are you going to verify the records themselves?
Yeah, I guess there's really no way to know whether they're genuine or not. I guess any operation as the one I just described on the part of the FBI and the AFIP would involve dozens of people, probably. So it would seem implausible that many people, to me at least, could be part of some elaborate lie or cover-up. But then again, who knows? It's, there's just so many unanswered questions. And hopefully this will, you know, can shed some light on it. It seems to me the one piece of information that prevents people from really knowing what happened there. You know, some people allege, you know, various things happened at the Pentagon. However, the government says that, you know, this happened in terms of, you know, human beings and, you know, the recoveries and identities and et cetera. So it's hard to know, but hopefully we can find out.
Yeah, well, you got to keep going after them with these FOIA requests, of course. It's, you know, one thing that strikes me after reviewing the history of some of these kinds of operations is that it appears that the military and intelligence community are capable of mobilizing a lot of people to lie and commit treason. And, you know, it's kind of amazing when you go back and look at Operation Northwoods, which would have required hundreds of people murdering Americans in Paris bombings around the country to provoke a war with Cuba, sinking a U.S. ship on the high seas, presumably killing hundreds more Americans. The fact that every member of the Joint Chiefs was willing to go along with that, and that this operation would have involved hundreds of people, it makes you realize that there are whole institutional forces capable of lies and treason on a scale that most of us would never really dream of being possible. And the same is true with other events, the Kennedy assassination, of course, and the Martin Luther King assassination, as William Pepper has described it. There are a number of other examples like that. So I think that we have to be kind of careful. I used to think that you'd have to keep this to the minimum number of people. The more I read, though, the more I look at this, the more I realize that not only do the military and intelligence communities have access to hundreds of people, at least, that they can mobilize to commit treason and mass murder of Americans, but we also have the neoconservatives coming up with a whole philosophy based on the need to do precisely this sort of thing, that the elite, when they govern properly in this Machiavellian manner, consistently has to lie and kill, and that's just the rules of the game for them. So I'm no longer of that camp that says that they would have to have done this with the absolute minimum number of people involved. I'm afraid that there's a possibility that quite a few people could be involved even knowingly, and it would still work.
Yeah, and true. The aircraft operations themselves that day, you know, were they tied into a larger operation? I think those could have been carried out quite discreetly, given the technology available at the time. As I said, it appears entirely plausible that these aircraft were simply guided by their own autopilot aircraft systems in an uninterruptible form. The patent I described earlier, allowing for the seizure of the aircraft from pilot control by the autopilot systems, describes this process as simply being carried out by a simple electronic or mechanical relay that engages the autopilot and does not allow it to be unengaged. And the most difficult part of the entire operation would have been the satellite guidance, but that was already in place. That was in place about a year before 9/11. The system, the signal was available. It wasn't officially sanctioned yet by the FAA, but it was available. And Some people have alleged that instead of the pilots guiding the aircraft and accused, that perhaps there were remote control systems utilized. But I've looked into this, and I'm not aware of any that are available for commercial aircraft. I know that there are unmanned aerial vehicles used by the military, but those are like comparing apples and oranges. However, the autopilot systems, the satellite GPS navigation signals, these were all developed right before 9/11 using the same aircraft that were involved, and all one would need was a simple electronic relay that could engage an autopilot system and turn aircraft into unstoppable guided missiles on September 11th, as they seem to have been, because I don't accept that pilots, the accused ones, carried out the attack.
Well, I agree with you there. I don't think that guys who couldn't fly a Cessna are likely to be able to hit these targets. I agree. I think that's the most plausible scenario. I know I've talked about this with Bob Bowman, and he agrees with this scenario as being the most plausible also. And we'll be back. What do you think? Call in. We're here at area code 512-646-1984.
The power back to the people. You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
Welcome back to Truth Jihad Radio, right here at We the People Radio Network. Now, you're hearing a version of Come Together with some very weird electronic additions to it, as if Lou Reed were playing Metal Machine music standing there beside the Beatles. What's going on here? Well, I don't know. Maybe Aiden Monahan has a slightly unreliable cell phone, so let's bring him back up here and hope that Metal Machine music isn't there anymore. Hey, Aiden, hi. How's it going? You still there?
How are we doing now?
Well, you're kind of talking in a bucket with a bucket over your head, but that's okay. I'd rather talk to you with a bucket over your head than a lot of people without one.
Well, I do appreciate that.
Yeah. You've done a little bit of research on the anthrax attacks, as well as asking the National Transportation Safety Board about the identification of aircraft allegedly used on 9/11. And, you found some interesting information about the possible, the CIA connection to anthrax weaponization and the way that that was all kind of swept under the rug in the various FBI investigations and framing of apparent scapegoats and pasties. You want to talk about that a little bit?
There seem to have been some other false flag operations after 9/11, including the anthrax attacks, and also I tend to believe, after looking at some of the information regarding the Beltway sniper shootings, that perhaps those were that was Act 3, the anthrax attacks being Act 2, because the timing of the anthrax attacks was right before the implementation of the Patriot Act through Congress, and the following year we had the Beltway sniper attacks that encircled the entire Washington, D.C. area, right at the time that the congressional debate for the Iraq War was taking place, and it was right during the same exact week, two-week, three-week period, and, after the capture of the alleged suspect, there were quotes that were provided by him where he claims to have been a CIA sharpshooter. He was a veteran of the Army, a veteran of the first Gulf War, just like Timothy McVeigh, for example. High-functioning individual, right, after his capture, revealed signs of brain damage, which perhaps is suggestive of some, who knows. But, there's just a lot of things that take place and that only seem very unusual with 2020 hindsight, and who knows what the source of all of them could be.
Right. As I understand it, you posted a couple of things on your blog about the this anthrax weaponization program. I've got it from various sources, including Barbara Honegger, who is the senior. Well, actually, I'm not supposed to say where she works. That's right. she's starting to get all worried about her job. But anyway, she does. She's still working for a pretty august institution. And she published a piece on my website, which is BarrettForCongress.us, pointing out that Battelle Memorial Institute, which is a biodefense contractor in West Jefferson, Ohio, has exclusive control of the Ames anthrax strain, and in partnership with the CIA and DIA, that is Defense Intelligence Agency, ran something called Project Jefferson, which was a covert and illegal offensive bioweapons program, and its goal was, get this, to develop a hyper-weaponized anthrax. And some of the people involved with that include William Patrick, somebody that you mentioned on your blog once. He's a former Fort Detrick scientist and a colleague of Jerome Hauer, another highly suspect individual. Now they're trying to blame this anthrax affair on Bruce Ivins, who passed two lie detector tests and whose handwriting did not match with the handwriting on these letters. The FBI's own timeline shows that he cannot possibly have been in the place necessary to mail these letters. And so given all of this, and given the fact that this anthrax apparently was weaponized or even hyper-weaponized, it would have to be to kill people, because anthrax by itself is just, it's already in your gut. It's everywhere. It only can hurt you if it's weaponized and ground to just the right fine quality to get into lungs. So this was weaponized anthrax. There's no weaponized anthrax anywhere near Fort Detrick, per se. It would appear that this was presumably done by those people at the Battelle Memorial Institute, West Jefferson, Ohio, working with the CIA and DIA, and sending the anthrax to Tom Daschle and Patrick Leahy, who were the two biggest roadblocks in the path of the Patriot Act. This would have it was also used as an excuse to pull the FBI off of its 9/11 investigation. So, given all of this, I think the evidence is pretty strong that we need a new anthrax investigation as well as a new 9/11 investigation, and that it needs to focus on the actual weaponized anthrax program, not just Fort Detrick.
Yeah, I'm not as well versed on the whole anthrax situation as I am with other 9/11 aspects, but you know, the timing is curious. You know, the targets were curious, to say the least. You know, it seems that every major almost terrorist event in the United States or throughout the world has been expected and anticipated and planned for by the U.S. government. Apparently, there were some exercises and studies done anticipating the use of weaponized anthrax against citizen targets, civilian targets. I think there was a report I cited in one of my blog postings from around 1999, about 2 years before the anthrax attacks themselves. You know, just like the Pentagon attack, just like the World Trade Center attack, you know, these were all anticipated and planned for by the government. So, you know, just another curious oddity, I guess, except as coincidence, but not me.
Right. Well, it's also, you know, it gets a little overly coincidental when you have Jerome Hauer personally advising the White House to take Cipro on 9/11.
Exactly.
That is beyond strange. Jerome Hauer was also on national network television on 9/11 blaming bin Laden for the attacks and explaining that the buildings had collapsed because planes hit them, which, you know, nobody could possibly have known either of those two things at that point. And, you know, so he's a really interesting kind of suspect, that it's Jerry Hauer, and he kind of ties together the 9/11 and anthrax attacks, as Barbara Honegger points out in that excellent article that I posted up at BarrettForCongress.us.
Yeah, it seems that this whole Al-Qaeda phenomenon is just a very powerful psychological myth that really has no bearing on the operational X's and O's of the 9/11 attacks and other alleged, you know, attacks carried out by them. They just seem to be largely a media manufactured myth that is sustained by the media, and there seems to be little or no core information that confirms, you know, their operational capability, their even their existence. I mean, for crying out loud, Bin Laden is still not cited for 9/11 within the FBI website. You know, his wanted poster. So it's just there's a lot of absent information, and there's a lot of what appears to be mythological information as well, in my view.
Right. There is a profound marked lack of outrage at the Islamophobic dimension of all of this. This is something that continually annoys me. For instance, with the anthrax attack, we accept the government story, and we accept that it was a false flag attack because Bruce Ivins wasn't a Muslim, and yet whoever sent that anthrax wrote, death to America, death to Israel, Allah is great, on the envelope. And that makes it an outrageous hate crime against Muslims. It helps contribute to the hatred that led to the murder of a million Muslims in Iraq. And this outrages me. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Kevin Barrett talking with Aidan Monahan.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Truth Jihad Radio Show right here on the People Radio Network. This is Kevin Barrett and talking with Aidan Monahan, who has been submitting Freedom of Information Act requests and getting interesting answers, including the answer from the NTSB that they have no evidence whatsoever pertaining to the identification of the four aircraft allegedly used on 9/11. Nonetheless, Aidan, you have explained that given this satellite guidance technology that was developed coincidentally just a year or so before 9/11, that the most probable hypothesis would be that these planes were guided by remote control into their targets, so that the lack of identification of the planes doesn't necessarily suggest that some other plane or non-plane did the damage or crashed at the four crash sites. So we do have open phone lines here. The number, once again, is, where is that number? I've lost my number here. It's area code 512-646-1984. You'd think I'd know that number by now. Area code 512-646-1984. Feel free to call in and let us know what you think about any and all of this. So, Aidan, you think that we're going to have an easier time or a harder time if and when this administration leaves power at getting answers out of the government about some of these things?
I don't know. It may become easier over the course of time, but it's pretty obvious given recent events that the government just doesn't want to go near or even address alternative theories. For example, the NIST report recently released the attitude on display at the press conference kind of summarizes the government's viewpoint on 9/11. They just simply don't want to address alternative information that is has its basis in rock solid science, and they would rather just propagate myths.
Well, that Building 7 press conference is pretty amazing. It's, you know, I guess we kind of saw it coming, but even so, you know, to hear them trying to tell us that ordinary office fires brought this building down straight into its footprint, and to hear them claim that the demolition hypothesis can be dismissed simply because the explosions were not loud enough, and that's it. I mean, there's nothing else apparently. That's just beyond the there's so much evidence now that's been brought to the table pointing towards controlled demolition. Chemical evidence, Stephen Jones has got all sorts of evidence for a thermite in these events. We've got people on the record talking about hearing a countdown over police radio before this demolition. We have the BBC and CNN reporting it ahead of time, saying that the Building 7 was down when it wasn't down yet, and on and on and on. None of this apparently was addressed by NST in their so-called investigation. Instead, they simply dismissed the whole possibility of controlled demolition, which is, of course, the obvious explanation for this, simply because they claim the explosions weren't loud enough. Is that as ridiculous as it sounds to me, or am I missing something here?
Well, I think there's plenty of evidence for the use of energetic materials, incendiary type materials that could only be created by a private industry or the military. The thermite, for example, that has been referred to. I mean, the evidence of molten metal in the ruins, the iron spheres that have been found within the dust that could only be generated by extreme temperatures and certain chemical elements that are contained within these thermite products. Also, there's I think has been sort of largely ignored is the videos and images of white smoke that were coming from the buildings, the towers themselves, just before they fell. Videos show this, photographs show this, and of course, thermite reactions generate what is known as aluminum oxide, which is white in color. And from the bases of the buildings, from openings in the buildings just before they fell, one can see white smoke emerging from each building before, or at least Tower 2 before it collapsed. And there's just so much evidence for the use of energetic materials like thermite being used. And the NIST people, they just ignore it and say, oh, well, no, fire did it. And we have a new phenomenon now, as Dr. Sunder said last week, a new phenomenon, thermal expansion causing the complete simultaneous failure of all supporting elements of Tower 7. It's just mythology. He referred to it as a new phenomenon. So,
the laws of physics.
Exactly. Wow. And once again, on 9/11, just another magical occurrence or coincidence. Oh, well.
Yeah, I had Kevin Ryan on recently talking about the fact that all of these NIST people, many of the key NIST people, who were always saying, what? Thermite, what's that? These people, it turns out, they're many of them are government scientists who have been involved in researching these high energetic materials themselves. It looks like we have the foxes guarding the hen house here.
Yeah, well-placed gatekeepers, perhaps.
Right. It's pretty amazing. An interesting aspect of all of this is that, the evidence does seem to be converging more and more in so many different ways here. I think in particular with the demolitions, back when there was that dispute a couple of years ago in Scholars for 9/11 Truth, in which we had the Steve Jones leading the charge and testing for thermite, and then we had another contingent exploring the possibility of directed energy weapons. Well, over time, it appears to me that the first group has brought forth the most persuasive evidence to back up their hypothesis, and certainly the best evidence to take into court on this matter. And it's interesting how evidence can sort itself out over time. And I would think that if this process continues, we'll have an even better idea of what actually happened, a couple of years from now. At some point, you got to find a way to get it into court.
Yeah, recalling a couple of years ago regarding some of the alternative, less plausible theories, I noticed that they all seem to spring to life at around the same time. The no planes theories, the directed energy weapons theories, they all seem to come to life at the same time. And right around the same time that certain people have personal fallings out with persons like Steve Jones, for example. One has to wonder at the timing of some of these, alternative explanations, these less plausible ones, in my view. I kind of found that hard not to notice at the time.
Yeah, well, I guess I didn't notice it so much at the time, having been in a position to see the dispute develop with access to both sides' perspectives. But I'm really starting to wonder now about some of this, just because that it does appear that the DEW hypothesis is not really going anywhere, whereas the thermite hypothesis, which of course is not an exclusive hypothesis, it's just arguing that this was at least one contributor to the demolition, does seem to be accumulating more and more evidence behind it. I don't know. Again, my attitude towards this is the Herodotus method of so and so says this, so and so says that. I leave it up to you to sort it out. In fact, even some of the sorting out that I'm going to do myself, I'm not necessarily going to be trying to put that front and center and impose that on everybody else. At the same time, there comes a point when you do have to say that, this particular path is vastly less productive than this other path.
Yeah, I would say right now that the controlled demolition hypothesis, the thermite hypothesis, is the leading candidate. The evidence is just far exceeds any of the evidence for alternative explanations. The iron spheres, the images of molten material pouring from the building just before it collapsed, Tower 2, I believe. The white smoke that was observed just before the collapse, the other evidence, obtained by the EPA, I think, some elements that were detected that may have been attributed to certain sol gels, I think as they're referred to, they could have been utilized with the thermite. Perhaps the fire collapse hypothesis seems to be a distant second at this point.
Okay, well, I pretty much agree with all that. We'll be back in a moment for our final segment. One last chance to call in, 512-646-1984.
Uncover the Truth with Catherine Albright, live from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Monday to Friday, right here on We the People Radio Network.
Welcome back. This is the First Internet Radio Show. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm on the web at barrettforcongress.us. And I'm talking with Aidan Monahan, a Freedom of Information Act researcher who's getting some revealing, if not intentionally revealing, answers from the government. Aidan, I understand that there was one FOIA request that they were going to try to ask a whole lot of money for asking. What was that one?
Which one do you refer to?
Well, there wasn't one pertaining to the towers pertaining to the NIST materials they used in their investigation that they were like.
Oh.
Yeah.
I requested access to the records, the photos, the videos utilized, the thousands that they used during their investigation. And they said that in order to begin a search for these records, they would require an upfront payment of over $19,000.
Yeah. Well, that's maybe chump change to Jimmy Walters, but to most of us, that would pretty much be prohibitive.
I have to write in my piggy bank. Let me go get it. Well, what's interesting, too, is they also advised me over the telephone that they have already contacted about 50% of the rights holders of the works in question, and that they have been advised by these people in almost every case that they do not want their information released by NIST to the public. Yet, in any event, they have told me that any remaining information in order to search for it, they still need $19,000, which I don't have, so.
Yeah, and did they explain precisely why it's that expensive?
They calculated, I guess they calculated search time and the number of records involved. And however, it really wouldn't be that difficult, in my view, to collect all this information since it was all consolidated during their investigation of the collapse. It should all be contained in, you know, one easily locatable file, I would imagine.
Right. I would imagine so, too. It sounds like they're just trying to discourage you. I can't imagine why that would be.
Someday I would like to obtain some of the raw, unbroadcast local affiliate footage that was generated on the day of the attacks. You know, of course, there were many unseen cameramen and reporters who certainly recorded probably lots of footage that never was broadcast, and I think a lot of that might be very revealing. You know, I'm sure a lot of those cameras were still rolling right up to the moment the first tower fell. I would like to see exactly what was going on at the base of at least Tower 2, because there are videos and footage that show, as I said, white smoke emerging from the base of Tower 2 just before it fell. I would like to know exactly what the source of that white smoke was. And I would think that maybe some TV cameras were recording at that time, and still those videos may be locked away that were never broadcast, and I would be glad to know what was on them.
Now would those videos still be in the sole custody of the TV stations and networks, or do you think that the FBI would have grabbed them?
The FBI grabbed a lot of evidence, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to learn that they may have grabbed some of that evidence as well. And what's also curious, I did send you a copy of their records chief's testimony pursuant to my court case, and perhaps if you noticed that they did detail many search criteria for the records that I'm requesting, which are the FAA records and the airline records pertaining to the aircraft, probably used during their investigation, probably obtained for their investigation, yet they claim they cannot find them. And I find that difficult to believe, that they would base their opinions on zero evidence. They should have based those opinions regarding the aircraft identification on tangible records, but they can't seem to find them, despite the fact that they used, according to their records chief, dozens of different criteria. So I would like to know where those aircraft records are. I would like to have them. I think the public deserves to see them. This should be one of the most transparent aspects of the whole investigation because, you know, we had the hijackers identified, the aircraft identified, the method of attack identified. So there's nothing to hide. Put it out there. Let us see it. Let's put the questions to bed. But the FBI just apparently can't find any of this stuff, or the NTSB for that matter. So
interesting. People just keep losing.
Yeah.
The BBC lost all their 9/11 footage, supposedly, remember, for quite a while. And when they claim they found it again, that was after we, you know, that tape from an affiliate had turned up showing the reporter announcing that Building 7 had fallen 20 minutes before it had. And contacted about that, BBC claimed that they had lost all of their 9/11 footage. So, you know, incredibly historic, valuable footage. It all just somehow got misplaced. That's very strange.
Yeah.
You know,
Able Danger.
Right.
Yeah, same thing with Able Danger.
Able
same
Danger.
Thing with,
like terabytes
yeah, same thing with the
data.
Lost.
Yeah. Deleted, actually. Just purposely destroyed, apparently. Something like gigabytes or terabytes. I don't know how many bytes these were, but, you know, vast amounts of data destroyed from Able Danger. You know, and obviously, transparency is necessary given the rabid skepticism about 9/11 all over the world. It's far more advanced in other countries than it is here, but it's, of course, been building a lot of momentum here, too. And, you know, Bob Baer, who is a former top U.S. CIA in the Middle East, has famously pronounced the need for absolute transparency on 9/11. All matters pertaining to 9/11. I don't think he's been satisfied yet. I think he said that, what was that, a year or two ago. You know, he came out and said, this looks really bad. We absolutely need total transparency. And the last thing I see is transparency. Hey, Aiden, are you still there? I'm getting some kind of busy signal. Hello, Aiden Monahan. We seem to have lost our guest, and we only have a minute left. I don't know if we're going to get him back. It's going to be touch and go. But we do have Mike from Kentucky calling in, so I'll bring him on in. Hey, hello, Mike. What's up? Hello, Mike. Oh, looks like we lost Mike, too. Well, I've heard of losing a Mike, but now I guess I lost a different kind of Mike because that was Mike Cook from Kentucky. Try again, Mike, if you want. Okay, let me try Aiden one more time and see if I get him instead of his busy signal there.
I'm back here. I seem to get cut off, so.
Okay, well, hey, welcome back, Aiden. Yeah, I was just saying before the break that, you know, you were saying that we need absolute transparency here, and there's absolutely no transparency. It's totally opaque. They're not giving anything out. And, you know, Bob Beer, who is the lead CIA agent in the Middle East, a very smart guy. His book, Blow the House Down, is a Romana Clay, a novel that's clearly about what might have really happened on 9/11 with a really monstrous Cheney character. Anyway, Bob Beer has famously called for absolute transparency. This looks really bad. If they don't give us transparency, you know, it's that's it. And, of course, no such transparency has been forthcoming. Hey, it looks like we do have Mike from Kentucky back. Let's try him. Hey, hello, Mike. How's it going, Mike? Hello, Mike.
Oh, I'm here. Can you hear me? Hello.
Okay, we got you now. How's it going?
Pretty good. I just wanted to tell you the dog ate my 9/11 footage.
Yours too, huh?
Yeah, it's all gone. Sorry. Adrian, really appreciate all your work. You there?
Hey, Aiden, are you still there?
Oh, sorry. Yes, still am, yes.
Yeah.
No, I just wanted to thank you for all your tremendous work. It's great stuff you're doing.
Well, I appreciate the compliment. I don't want to wait for 20 or 30 years for an investigation to finally come about. So the Freedom of Information Act does allow for the public to obtain some information that might not be otherwise made available for years to come. So,
yeah,
thanks again. I do appreciate it. You know, it's helpful to me, too. I would like to know the answers to some of these questions myself.
You know, maybe we need the equivalent of the JFK Act for 9/11. You know, they passed that JFK Act in 1992, the year after Oliver Stone's movie came out, mandating the collection of all records pertaining to the JFK assassination and making them public. And I think we could use something like that for 9/11. And, hey, if I'm elected to Congress, I will most certainly introduce such a bill. You can find out more about my campaign at barrettforcongress.us.
Aiden must have learned quite a lot about the process. I would like it if he'd have that up on the web for folks to use. I've tried some FOIA requests myself and have gotten nowhere with them.
The rules are set up in such a way that it does allow for the agents to drag their feet, so to speak. Depends on who you're really dealing with.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay.
Thanks.
Well, yeah, thank you. Thanks, Mike. Good to hear from you. Take care. And Aiden, thank you for coming on. I appreciate
it. Thanks
great
for having me, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Okay, and keep it up. And when you hear something more interesting from one of these FOIA requests, be sure and let me know, and we'll bring you back to talk about it.
Yeah, I'll hear from the NTSB tomorrow, and I will get that right away as soon as I get it.
Sounds good. Yeah, well, maybe I can have you call in sometime fairly soon.
Okay, thanks again, Kevin.
Okay, take care, Aiden. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
That was Aiden Monahan, indefatigable 9/11 researcher, and was talking about FOIA requests. This is Kevin Barrett. I'll be back next weekend, so see you then.
The Bill of Rights protects every American's God-given right to keep and bear arms. Now that right is being seriously undermined as legally registered rifles are being confiscated in some parts of our country. If we're not careful, we may find ourselves with no right to own guns. And that's where Gun Owners of America comes in. Gun Owners of America is in Washington every day fighting for you to keep that right. Congressman Ron Paul has called GOA the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. You need to be part of this great grassroots group of activists who are keeping the heat on their members of Congress. Find out right now how you can join. Call 888-886-GUNS and get started receiving their fact-filled newsletters and action alerts. Call 888-886-GUNS or go to their webpage at gunowners.org and help make your voice heard in Washington. Make that call right now and call Gun Owners of America at 888-886-GUNS. Remember, it's not just about gun control, it's about control.